theoretically possible.
Why waste time?
But it doesn't make any sense.
Discovery Houston, press to ATO.
3, 2, 1.
What's up, everybody? How you doing, Quinn?
Hi, how's it going?
I'm very good. We're here doing it again. I think this is our seventh day of doing a daily episode.
Yay, we did it.
Well, we gotta keep going. It doesn't end here.
No, it doesn't. But it's definitely been an amazing week of progress, I would say.
Yeah,
because
it's a
we've
mile
practiced
marker.
Yeah, we've practiced a full 7 days, at least once a day.
At least once a day. And I'm very confident in saying that we've averaged over an hour of recording each day.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, I mean, it sounds easy, but...
No, it's required for us to get to the level that we expect ourselves to be.
Exactly. I mean, this is a lot. I mean, not only... I mean, this is how we talk, you and me, but we have to, you know, we're a lot more aware of the little words in between
right. What
we say, you know, and...
We've been working on cleaning it up, getting it clearer, better communication skills, and also being aware that we're not just having conversation with ourselves, but this is for others to listen to, our friends.
Exactly. Well, part of, I mean, I know that you've watched a couple of videos and read some stuff about why we say, like, you know, use those little words.
Yeah.
A lot of it has to do often with, you know, you're overthinking it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of part of... That's definitely something that I know I do for sure. Yeah.
We still do it a little bit, but I like to think that if we actually listen to our very early attempts to now,
we'd
be much more cleaner.
Well, we have listened to them and they were bad. Just like anything, when you start off doing something for the first time is not always your best work, but it's a really important part of the process.
Right.
So excited. I can feel myself gaining more and more confidence and just saying what's in my brain, because there's a lot. I mean, you and I have a lot of information inside of our little brains.
Yep. Teeny tinies.
And it's still very curious and constantly learning, and just being able to take in interesting topics and then have an intelligent conversation.
Discussion, yeah.
Yeah, discussion is really what we're trying to get to. So,
yeah. I remember one major moment for us as far as confidence with our podcast idea was when we came together to work on the song, which we have our intro song.
Oh man.
So first off, that is not just pulled off the internet and we did not buy that. We actually made that.
Well, let's be clear. John made it.
It was definitely a collaborative effort.
It was, but he did a really great job. It was, you know, using things out of GarageBand, using, you know, vintage audio clips that, you know,
I found across
the internet, and I just think that it's exciting, and we both are very, very connected to music. Music is a huge part of our life,
mm-hmm.
and it's always been a huge part of our creativity also. I mean,
yeah.
Put on the headphones, turn on the music, and I'm in a zone,
right.
kind of a deal.
And so the question was, what kind of zone do we want ourselves and our listeners to be in when they turn on our episode?
Yeah, and so I hope that it makes people feel like excited to learn something, curious. Oh, where's this going to go?
Right. You know? Energized and kind of definitely the curiosity is emphasized with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It went through how many drafts? Like probably
lots.
At least like 10.
Yeah, that's how it takes that, if not more, for most music to get produced, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's going to be an outro song on every single episode, but the outro song is one of the earlier versions of the intro.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit longer, so there's more detail in it. And because it's longer, I was able to play around with other sounds to take people on a different journey.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's all fun.
John's got a really great talent. He's always had a talent since I've known him, even before we got together.
You're
of
being
creating.
Too kind.
No, I'm serious. He's really, really good at making music and mixing music too. I mean, one of my most favorite things to do with John at night when we're having, you know, some time together, having a couple drinks, is him just playing DJ music on his phone and just talking and dancing. And he's so, so talented at it. So it's really nice, actually. I mean, even during our PhD, I was like, babe, you should lean into this. He's like, I've got no time to do that. What are you talking about?
To me, it was just a hobby, like something that you, like someone, I don't know, like playing video games or,
right,
you know, doodling for fun.
Yeah, it is. But I think that's a great hobby to have. And you haven't really had a lot of time to be able to do it. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying a hobby, well, you know, and getting better at it. And okay, look, it's hard. I've tried it. Okay, you just have this natural knack for it. So I think, you know, if there's something that, I mean, I had a natural knack for softball pitching. So I went into that, you know, I mean, that was definitely not just a hobby, but it started off as just a fun hobby, right?
Right.
If you have a natural talent with music, you know, hopefully, I'm hoping that you're going to continue playing a little bit more. I know you've made a couple of other songs since we've moved to Florida, but I'm hoping that music can be more of something that we can incorporate with whatever we're creating with this podcast too.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I definitely remember being in fifth grade, getting questioned about like my personality and what careers would be most fitting for me. And I remember some of the questions asked if I always had music stuck in my head or if I always enjoyed, you know, doing activities and involved music. And I thought everyone did, but it is kind of weird that full circle at this point, I do see how much pleasure I do get out of music, and to see that maintained within me, yeah, ever since fifth grade is kind of a strange thought.
It's amazing. Do you remember this conversation that we had in Oklahoma? There was some video, I think, interview with Kanye West, and he said he's always seen music.
Like,
he's able to visualize music. Yeah. And you told me that you oftentimes feel the same way. There's a lot of times where you can actually see it. It's like you're very visual with the way that you express things and see things, but you can translate it into audio, which is so fascinating. And I actually ended up bringing that story about Kanye West and you into my classroom, into my lab when I was teaching.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I actually said, you know, because the lesson we were working on was a rhythm. Mm. And so I was showing them, you know, various different ways that music has been created and how that can be visually expressed.
Mm-hmm.
And to my surprise, there were a couple of people in my class also who said, I've never heard someone say that, but I feel the same way.
That's funny.
Which is really cool. I just think that's because I don't necessarily visualize how music is made when I'm listening to something, but I just think it's a really interesting way for someone's brain to process it, and obviously it in some way helps because right.
Yeah, I clearly recall in high school art class, Miss Cheney, she was very nice, but I was always late to her class, and for some assignment we had to draw what we felt from the music that we were listening to, and I believe her expectation was that we would draw a scenery from the music. So if you were hearing, you know, jungle beats, maybe you're drawing a walk through the jungle with
right.
different animals.
Yeah.
And I ended up attempting to draw the different sound waves and put in different colors to represent the vibe of it. And she hated it. I remember.
Are you serious?
Well, I get it though, because it wasn't exactly what she wanted. And I definitely was not doing the same activity as everyone else.
That's interesting.
But yeah, I don't know.
It shows how different you interpreted the lesson, though. Because what's so interesting about the fact that you did that is exactly what the assignment for my lesson was for the students, was basically pick a song, any song. I don't care what song it is. It could be country, EDM, rock, whatever. And then make a visual piece based on what you hear in that song. And I said you could go for the lyrics. You can go for the beats. You can go for the instrument. Well, whatever you want. Whatever mm-hmm. is connecting with you. And there was one guy, I'll never forget, he created just like the most amazing piece, and it was more like yours, like what you're saying. He really, really visualized the beat, the making of it. And I just asked him, I said, how did you do this? This is pretty amazing. I mean, did you use, like, at this point we have applications that can show you, you know, and basic, you know, of all the different parts of the song. And he said, oh no, I make music every night. That's what I do.
That's
I love making music. Can I hear some of it?
So did you give him a bad grade?
No, I didn't. I see, I'm a very different teacher,
like,
I guess,
circle,
than Mrs. Cheney.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted, I mean, for me, a lot of the kids who I was teaching, it was their first time ever being able to do any sort of like art projects.
Yeah.
It was their first exposure because a lot of the art programs in Oklahoma public schools had been cut. So it was a really great opportunity to bring in people who were brand new to this, who were really interested, but didn't really have the confidence to break through, to really hone in their skills, to just, I mean, it's not like I was trying to say everyone is amazing, but just encouraging people to think outside the box and be different. I mean, and that guy's one piece, obviously it stands out in my mind. It was very different. And to me, I'm from a professor standpoint, I want to know who is different.
Right.
You know, Kanye West is very different. I mean, regardless of what you think of him, the way he makes music has changed the music industry.
Definitely.
We want more artists and thinkers that think differently, you know?
Yeah, I don't particularly think I'm really talented with the creation of music. I think that if I did pursue it a little bit more, maybe I'd learn a few more tools and then something could come out of it. But doing this whole podcasting thing emphasized to me that I should have listened to you about pursuing my hobby of creating music, because even though I never intended on, you know, being a DJ or being a producer, those skills would have helped in a major way with even just this audio recording that we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sometimes it's just meant to be. And I think the key is to just do what you're passionate about. And that's one other reason why I do really enjoy making these podcasts, because it is kind of like an odd way of making music, but it's a different type of audio, you know?
Right.
And so there is a lot of editing and a lot of playing around with it, but it's just not so much pattern based at the beginning and at the end. It's more just that natural conversation.
Just natural conversation with, I mean, somewhat of a structure, but not really. I mean,
definitely intro, outro, middle bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Talk about the podcast at the beginning sometimes, and then towards the middle end, shift and be open towards different topics.
Right, exactly. I mean, we're going off the cuff most of the time. We don't really have a script or anything like that. But we, when we first started this, we definitely tried. I mean, I was looking up how to tell a story, you know, as if I didn't know how to tell a story. But, you know, that's
kind of... You took a Khan Academy class on it, which actually sounded really interesting.
It's really fun. I highly recommend it. It was a Khan Academy with Pixar. And Pixar was basically, it's just a class on how to story tell.
Yeah, that one did seem a little bit more focused on fictional storytelling.
For sure.
Like developing a character and so on. Where ours are nonfiction, if we were to categorize our podcast.
For sure. But ever since I took that class, I have been thinking a lot about storytelling. A lot about storytelling and the power that storytelling has. And I think that it's one of the most underrated things that anyone can use to communicate a lesson.
Information in general.
In general, exactly. I think, you know, if you think about how we talk to each other, like one of my favorite, you know, childhood memories was going camping and talking around the campfire, right? And like telling little ghost stories. I don't know why. I loved doing that. And one of the things that came out of the Khan Academy class was, you know, they say go back to your childhood and think of a time where you started really like falling in love with stories, because that's really how kids are taught a lot of things, because they don't have the cognitive capacity to just read something and then take the information in and understand it. Right.
Right.
But if you think about even just important stuff like science, for example, right now, people are, they're so data driven. They're so data obsessed. And come on, I understand data and the power that it can have to be able to help teach us things and progress science, which is a really important thing. But I think that a lot of people misunderstand science, and that's where things get tricky, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of misinterpretation of science. And if you can tell a story, I mean, I'm not religious, but one of the reasons why so many great, the biggest religions, just think about Christianity, is connects with so many people, is it's just through storytelling. There are moral lessons embedded in these stories that have been passed down for generations and generations, right? Yeah. And whether or not you believe in them is
they're
one
good
thing.
Lessons.
They're just good lessons. I mean, a moral compass of what is wrong or what is right is an important thing. And so I'm even thinking about, like, I love philosophy too. And I think there's so many really great ideas in philosophy mm-hmm. that just completely get missed because it's, you're talking over people's head. If you could take really important, like fundamental, from fundamental to the most fantastic, amazing findings that we've had in our history of humanity, right? Or just thoughts that are out there in the world. Like, I think about Alan Watts, even one of my favorite all-time, you know, modern-day philosophers. Yeah.
Or he was.
At Berkeley.
He died. But he was, UC Berkeley.
I just think about, like, the way, if you listen to some of his lectures, the way he's telling people a story. Mm-hmm. Like, he's telling them a story about their life that they can connect with and how that really impacts how philosophy and the way that they think and the way that they go about the world impacts the human that they are and the world that we live in. And it's just, it's a really, like, kind of like too much. It's a huge idea kind of a thing. He has some really amazing, crazy, you know, ideas, but he
is crazy in a good way.
Crazy in a great way.
Crazy, crazy.
Yeah. No, but I mean, like, they're really lofty ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
out of the box, per se.
Well, yeah. And I wish that I could have been in his lecture live at one point, but
who doesn't?
I know, he's amazing. But, you know, there are a lot of other people like that who have had the great ability and skill to take science, philosophy, and thoughts and then become really great storytellers that allow us to connect with what they're saying.
Yeah. Learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. The best example I can think of for, especially for like little kids on something that's meaningful to me, is Pixar using their production crew to put the movie together called Inside Out.
Oh, I love that movie.
And understanding one's feelings and how they interact with each other. And
yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, very creative. And
it's so creative. It's so creative because it really, they did actually have some psychologists on the team to actually like help them understand where the current understanding of emotions is in psychology. And no one's going to read those academic articles by the psychologists about where we're at with emotions. I've read a lot of them and it's, we don't really know very much still.
Mm-hmm.
We're still trying to figure it out. But the fact that they were able to take what science currently understands about how emotions affect us in our brain. Mm-hmm. And they made an amazing, amazing animated film out of that where kids can start being like, oh, wait, I understand why I'm sad. You know, like they can think, they can attach a character with their various different emotions and say, oh, okay, this too will pass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I've got a friend who is the sad person. I have to be sad right now. You know, it's really cute and I love it.
Right. Yeah. It's even beyond just for little kids. I think I remember you mentioned that, your counselor said it's even a good idea to watch it.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, explain.
100%. Yeah. I'm a big proponent of, you know, therapy, of just having preventative therapy. Just especially the PhD pushes to limits of stress that I hadn't experienced in, I don't know when, right? So,
yeah. We can be open. We've had panic attacks at certain moments when there's just so much going on.
I had my first panic attack in Oklahoma. Yeah. That was... I didn't know that they actually were a real thing, but they really are, and they're super scary. But yeah, my therapist that summer when we were like going through our defense and, you know, trying to get our dissertation done, she asked me if I'd seen it, and I just said, no. The Pixar movie? She said, yeah, trust me. You got to watch it. You'll understand why. Uh-huh. And we did. And I just fell in love with it.
It's a beautiful story.
It's a beautiful story. We lose memories, we lose our imagination over time as a kid, and like how you can make sure that you stay true to who you really are, you know? Yeah. And it's just, I love it. I love being reminded that we should really try to, as much as possible, hang on to that, you know, childlike imagination and spirit.
Yeah, there's something special about it, because if you take it away, lose a little bit of the belief in doing something much bigger, more grand.
Exactly. You know? I mean, think about how much you dreamt of when you were a kid, and why does it all of a sudden become a thing that you can't do when you're an adult?
I definitely feel that I hold tight to those even today, more so than maybe even ever.
Gets harder and harder the more you grow up,
though. It does, but you gotta just ignore some of that noise. You know, you work hard. You don't want to be super hypothetical and make-believe, but at the same time, it's a great idea to hold true to who you are and right. pursue those larger endeavors and do what you can to ensure that you're pursuing something much bigger than yourself.
That's a really good point. And I think one way to kind of even kind of bring this full circle, I guess, with the storytelling
I'm excited.
Think about how you want the story of your life to be told when you pass. Think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, what story are people going to tell about you? They're going to, you know, are they going to say you were a really great person? Are they going to say, oh yeah, he had a really great job that he stuck with and he got tenure, you know, whatever. No, they're maybe,
we can't discount that just because it's not us.
Well, I guess, you know what, honestly, it's just, you're in control to a certain extent of the story of your life. There are right. external influences that
of
all,
course.
Like a pandemic hits and you can't control that, mm-hmm. right? But in regards to the little actions that you take, what career path you want to take, who you marry, who you're friends with, where you move and where you travel and all these little things that end up making a life.
We believe you can control
influence a
major component of it.
Oh, I think that if you truly just think about that more and more about, well, what kind of a story do I want my life to tell?
Legacy, perhaps?
Legacy? Well, it's interesting because this morning, I don't think you know this, but I pulled out my grandfather's memoirs.
Mm.
And I was reading. My grandfather was an amazing man, and I truly, truly cherished and still do our relationship. He was a huge part of my life. And one of my favorite moments, even in college, but when I was a kid too, but in college, I lived with him and my grandmother during the summers in between semesters.
Right.
And I would just ask, we would go to breakfast everywhere. I'd just ask, will you tell me stories? Will you tell me more stories about your time living? I mean, he worked for IBM and he lived overseas a lot of his adult life, but he really also even told me about stories of his younger childhood life, but he didn't really get into too much. My grandfather had the most amazing memory, like detailed memory to the T, and he wrote it all down before he passed. Like, he was writing this in his later on in his life. And now what an amazing gift I get to still learn more about my grandfather through his own words. It's amazing.
You get to see inside of his brain.
He had an amazing story.
Yeah.
I mean, he really, every chapter was so different. I mean, he lived in Indonesia, he lived in Hong Kong, he lived in Europe, he lived everywhere, and he had some really interesting experiences, and he's very honest and raw, and I think the more
authentic. He's Man, we very use that authentic. Word so much, but it's a great word.
I think it's a good guiding compass.
Mm-hmm.
Really is, you know. It's hard too. I mean, with a lot of people creating right now, you know, one of the big questions is, okay, well, does this brand align with me? Are they going to censor me if I take on this partnership? So is it money or authenticity? And it seems like sometimes those things don't always pair up. But really, the biggest thing for me is when I read his story, it is so authentic. He's so raw, almost to the point where I don't know if he would have told me some of these things, but he's able to.
Yeah, probably not, actually.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't have. I mean, he talks about my grandmother in there, you know, and they were divorced, but then they became, I mean, they were still best friends, lifelong best friends, and they lived next door to each other at the end of their life. But, you know, there are things about people's life that, of course, will always stay private. But in general, what kind of a story do you want to create for your life, and how do you want people to remember you? I think it's a really powerful thought exercise.
Yeah, definitely. I have a lot of admiration for that gentleman. He's a cool guy.
Me too.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I remember first time I ever watched Triple D, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives with Guy Fieri. And I think a lot of people look at him and they're like, who is this fake guy? Because he's got this bleach blonde hair and he's like so wild with his like flame shirts and so on. But then the more you watch him, the more you realize that is authentically who he is, which is really weird that he is that person. And then you start liking him more because you're understanding that that's who he is through and through.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's hard to be authentic. It's really hard.
It can be challenging for some, especially in specific positions.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're in a corporate type setting or a political type setting, it can bite you in the butt.
Yep. Sometimes, I think. Yeah, 100% though. I think you have to be really strong in understanding who you really are. And that sometimes can be difficult, especially if you listen to people more and more throughout your life who tell you what you should be doing, what path you should be on, what kind of person you should be. You know, the more you listen to that, the less you are yourself. You have to, you can't be insular. You can't be someone who just doesn't take feedback at all. But you got to be able to pick and choose.
What if you're authentically a bad guy or a bad girl?
That's scary.
You know, like authentically, this is who you are and it's no bueno. Like it's potentially dangerous. That's not a good situation.
That's really bad.
But
I don't know.
So maybe the key is to be authentic as long as you're a good person.
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that's happening right now is a genuine desire for authentic figures. I mean, I think I talk about this all the time, but Cardi B is just such a fascinating character to me because she fully embraced her past. She was, I am a stripper. This is 100% what I did. I did this to make money. I was a boss and I knew that I would be able to get here someday. Right. Yeah. And so she completely leans into who she is and who she was. And she doesn't apologize for it. I don't think that makes her a bad person. Some people not might say that she's a bad person for doing that. I don't think she is. And she's completely opened up. She almost like has liberalized like an entire group of women who felt like their sexuality was kind of more. It was something to use against them. Mm. And she kind of took it and said, no, fully, this is me. And the WAP song caused a lot of controversy and whatnot. But, you know, I think taking back a woman's sexuality, I mean, that, I don't know how you can do that. But she somehow did it for, and I think a lot of people follow her simply because when she talks, that's who she is. You can't really, you know, whether you like her or you don't. It could be, that's the thing about authenticity too, is it can be polarizing.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious how authenticity plays within the idea of self-control, because by having self-control, you should, self-control has a lot of benefits to individuals on their attempts to achieve goals and achieve their own definition of success.
Right.
But if you have too much self-control, you might lose that thing that makes you special.
Yeah,
perhaps.
I agree. That's a really good and interesting point. I think even more than self-control, it's self-awareness.
Well, we're getting way deep now.
I know, but self-awareness is, I mean, that's a variable that we've looked at a lot of times in our research as being, you know, connected with a lot of different traits that allow people to climb up a ladder or to be able to, you know, adapt into certain situations because you're aware that you're not fitting in, right? So say like when we moved to Nicaragua, culture shock is a real thing. And we were on that bus and I was very self-aware that I would not ever be taken seriously like a local. Right.
Yeah.
And, but like, I can't change that about myself. There are certain things I can't change about myself. And so I just adapt to my reaction to the external.
And that doesn't take away from your authentic self either.
Right. Right. So but I do think that, as we've talked about in the past too, is I do think my self-awareness has allowed me to adapt to more business settings that maybe I don't necessarily feel is a great representation of who I am.
That's interesting. That one I might have to think about for a second.
Yeah, it's kind of a deep route to go. But I think what we're really focusing on is trying to just be who we are, and we're figuring it. I mean, we know who we are.
Right. We do. I hope so.
I think so.
Wife Quinn.
But it's so nice to have this time. And sometimes it feels like it's too much time, but it's nice to have this time to really reflect on, again, even at 33 years old, who am I really? And reconnect with like who I really, really am and who I want to be.
Yeah. In a weird way, it is almost like an outlet to allow us to be that.
True. Very true. And I think authenticity doesn't mean that you have to share every single part of your life.
Definitely not. I'm not going to install security cameras in here for everyone to log in and watch the live stream.
Yeah, I do think that there is something to be said for valuing privacy. But for sure, when you open yourself up to being authentic, you have to be able to take the good and the bad, you know, because the the one trade-off with authenticity is that you're not people-pleasing. And that's what I love, because that's what I'm going for, authenticity over people-pleasing.
Yeah, that's going to be a bit of a journey for you, I can tell, but
it is. But I'm working on it, and I feel like the more we're doing things, the more we're progressing with our own business and really trying to put something together, the more I feel like we're getting there.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know where this path is going, but I feel like it's the right path.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see the turns, and you know, who knows, there might be a junction that we get off on. I don't know.
Who knows? It's fun, and I just feel it's not too much of a cost. 24 hours a day, put an hour into creating it, and then hours, of course, go into like making sure that it's presentable.
Right.
But that 1 hour of the day, I'd much prefer to do that than an hour of exercise.
I know, me too.
You know, I'd rather just have these great conversations, learn. I always learn something whenever we do this.
Me
from
too.
You. And
from you.
Have great conversations about what's going on in the world, where our heads are at, and we learn not only about the world around us, but we definitely learn a little bit more about ourselves too.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, I mean, hopefully what we'll do during our conversations is bring more storytelling into it. I think that that's definitely something that you and I are both pretty excited to do.
Yeah, true stories,
real, right, really not, true stories.
Not always about us. It could be
no
about
it could
others.
Be about other people. Yeah. Exactly. So
I think it's a good time to say goodbye to our wonderful friends, allow them to enjoy their day.
Yeah.
And let's go and change the world.
Let's
I love
go.
You.
I love you too. Bye.
See you later. Bye.
Okay, bye.
This journey through sound.